Well, investigators applied for 7 passports using fraudulent documents and received 3 of them. Actually, though, state issued the other 2 as well, so actually 5 of 7, but state recovered 2 of them in the mail before GAO received them. So in some ways, they printed 5. They only GAO only got 3, and Greg Kutz, who is the managing director for Forensic Audit Specialist, held up those 3 passports during the hearing, so he was showing them off. But Kutz, again, he testified today, and this is
some of the key flags that state missed include a 62-year-old using a Social Security number issued in 2009, counterfeit driver's licenses and birth certificates, as shown on the monitor to my right there. One application with a vast age difference between the passport and driver's license photo, and one application with a California mailing address, a West Virginia permanent address and driver's license, and a Washington, D.C. telephone number.
The 2 that were recovered before GAO got them, obviously, what the State Department did, they use
actually... It's not totally unusual these days. People have cell phones, and they often will keep their numbers, so...
Well, but I think that's a red flag to say, okay, let's figure this out. Maybe there's something going on here. Hmm. And you're right, because, I mean, there's so many people who move out of D.C.
And you keep your cell phone number.
202 number.
Right.
It's like the, what's it, in New York, the 917 or something?
Right.
The 212.
Yeah. 212.
There you go. I think it was a Seinfeld.
Yeah. Sex in the City.
Oh, sorry.
She was all awful that she had to give up her 212.
There you go. But we digress back to what we're really talking
about
here.
Wheels off the bus.
The state printed those 2 passports, but they actually used facial recognition software to recover them before they got out there. They realized there's a problem. They matched up the pictures and said, something's fishy.
Oh, really?
They went through the Postal Service and said, bring those back to us. Huh. This was actually the second time in 2 years that GAO ran a sting operation on the State Department to obtain fake passports. The first time, March 2008, GAO ended up going 4 for 4. So obviously the State Department is learning from their mistakes.
And this is, of course, important in light of this was one of the big recommendations of the 9/11 Commission report, because most of these folks had passports. Most of the 9/11 terrorists had passports.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that came out was, that was a question came up, terrorism. And it always does when we talk about fraudulent documents and could a terrorist get it? And they said, well, if it's a homegrown terrorist in the U.S., that, you know, who was a U.S. citizen,
they could have it legally,
or if they wanted to get a fake name but still be a U.S. citizen, they could get one.
Right.
It's the, if you're a terrorist coming from country XYZ, then you're not a U.S. citizen. State Department has a much better process to check if you're a citizen or not, or at least I guess you can only have a passport if you're a citizen. Even if you're an alien, a resident alien, you still couldn't have a passport. So that was a big deal that came up. But she said it does worry her a fair amount. This is Brenda Sprague, who we'll hear from in a second, that homegrown terrorists could have fraudulent documents, fake birth certificates, for instance, and get a fake passport.
So State Department, a lot of challenges. What are they doing to fix these problems?
I think several things. First off, they did some short-term fixes. All the personnel who issued these counterfeit passports were put on what they call 100% audit. So obviously everything they do gets audited. and I think that's the first thing. They conducted fraud training for adjudicators and the acceptance facilities that were involved in the sting. They accelerated an aggressive deployment of schedule for the enhancements to their issuance system, including that facial recognition software, and they strengthened the requirements for the use of out-of-state identity documents and added more training based on the issues GAO found. Now, there were also some short-term changes. State also won some longer-term improvements. Brenda Sprague is the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Passport Services.
The greatest threat to the integrity of the passport issuance process is document fraud. We need additional tools and stronger authority. First, we seek your assistance to pass legislation to designate Consular Affairs as a law enforcement entity for the purpose of data sharing. We need full access to state registries of birth and death and other identity information. Currently, our access is restricted by the lack of such designation. Second, we seek the subcommittee's support to encourage standardization of the birth documents that we accept as proof of citizenship. There are more than 6,400 jurisdictions issuing birth certificates in the United States, with more than 14,000 versions in circulation. 13 states allow open access to birth records, allowing virtually anyone to purchase copies of birth certificates on file. Differences in paper, format, signatures, and security features make the detection of fraudulent birth certificates daunting.
Now, right now, the State Department has limited access to state and local law enforcement databases. This is something called NLETS. This is something we've covered through the Justice Department quite a bit. Mm-hmm. 43 of 50 states have provided limited information to the State Department. One state, actually, South Dakota, said, no, you can't have our information. And Ms. Sprague was very nice about it. She goes, well, just, you know, they have some real strict privacy issues going. Really? They have some really regulations in South Dakota. But it also hampers their ability to see what's fraudulent and what's not. Do you have a driver's license from this state, or is this
so
a fake
information
one?
They share is information about driver's license and stuff like that. So you can, so they could do the facial recognition stuff to make sure that the face on the passport matches the face on the driver's license, that kind of thing.
It's more about if Chris Dorbeck has a driver's license in D.C., does Chris Dorbeck also have a driver's license in California, and does it make sense for Chris to have two driver's licenses versus the facial recognition is if Chris Dorbeck applies for a passport, and then Jason Miller, using Chris Dorbeck's picture, applies for a passport using... Okay, well, now we have two people with the same picture. That's the facial recognition. Yeah. Now, Sprague also says Congress must mandate all passport applicants provide their Social Security numbers. This is the key piece to verifying citizenship. Right now, the Social Security Administration turns around those requests from the State Department within 24 hours, but both GAO and state believe that real-time access, or near real-time access, really is most necessary. Another important improvement the State Department is doing is the use of that facial recognition technology, Sprague says.
What we are doing across the board is to have facial recognition of all incoming passport applications. We are rolling that out gradually across the network. However, we have a second tool, which is facial recognition on demand, where we can take a single photograph when we suspect fraud and run that against the entire database. As of this moment, it is rolled out to all the agencies. It wasn't there in April and May, but it is a secondary tool. There are actually two parts to our facial recognition technology. One, to do it as part of the upfront of the application process, and the other one is to have a secondary check when we encounter a fraud that we can go back and look and see if it's there.
Now, Sprague expects all passport offices run by the State Department, because remember, you can go to County Clerk's office and the Postal Service to get your passport. So these are just all the passport offices run by the State Department to have this facial recognition tool by September 15th.
So Congress lawmakers, I'm sure, interested in getting these issues fixed. What kind of help are they offering?
Always a little bit.
Yeah.
This is the second hearing by the Senate Judiciary Committee on passport fraud, and lawmakers are starting to get that frustration feeling. Okay, you had the one problem. You've said you fixed certain things, and yet you still have more problems. Subcommittee Chairman Ben Cardin and Senators Dianne Feinstein and Joseph Lieberman introduced legislation today to help solve some of these problems. Cardin explains what the bill will do.
Legislation that will help to close the door to passport fraud. Today I'm introducing the Passport Identity Verification Act. This legislation is a common sense solution that will give the State Department the legal authority that it needs to access information contained in federal, state, and other data banks that can be used to verify the identity of every passport applicant and to detect passport fraud without extending the time that the State Department takes to approve passports.
But John Kyle, the ranking member of the subcommittee, believes there are things state can do without legislation.
Irrespective of whether State Department passport adjudicators have law enforcement authority, state could work more collaboratively with Social Security Administration to ensure that accurate and appropriate and near real-time information about Social Security numbers is pursued by those approving passport applications. Additionally, the State Department could work more proactively with the Department of Homeland Security to make sure that the Electronic Vital Events System project, which digitizes birth records, is completed. And State Department, in my view, should always work to confirm a birth certificate's authenticity. It's troubling that DHS was required to complete a spending plan for 2010 for the $10 million in appropriations for that consortium project, but only yesterday, 10 months into the fiscal year 2010, sent the spending plan up to Congress.
Now, Sprague says SSA runs a database that reports deaths. So when you die, you no longer get your Social Security, and your Social Security number gets recycled eventually. But actually, SSA will stop supporting that database in the coming years, and that's going to cause more challenges for the State Department to identify, to do identity verification. And obviously, this database that DHS is doing, they're way behind as well in the fact that they just sent their spending plan to Congress this month when they're supposed to do it earlier in this year. And you remember during the Bush administration, they tried something called eVital. And that was, again, births and death certificates standardizing the intake process, not the documents, but the specific data sets so you can, so everyone, it all comes in regularly standard.
Right. There's standards around it. This always dances around the issue of people start freaking out about a national ID card. And I know, at least for the government side, I think it would make things much easier if there was that standard. Everyone has the same thing. It just freaks people out.
And that's one of the things that Ms. Sprague said was, listen, I'm not asking Congress to mandate one specific birth certificate for everyone. But she says, if we have 50 of them, her life would be a lot easier. But because each state and each county and each jurisdiction that deals with birth certificates, they're so different. And then, you know, some people want the first name, you know, first name, last name, then last name, first name. And that makes data intake, XML, you know, makes it that much harder to do. So I think that's what she was asking for, not what you're talking about, the one for everyone.
Right.